Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
This week on the podcast, we're talking to Leanne Lahavis. Welcome back to another episode, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. This week, we have a very special guest.
Hey.
And it's another Leanne.
We can't get enough. The more we can get, the
more
better.
The merrier.
We just can't get enough of the Leanne. So Leanne Lahavis is here, music artist, songwriter, and she has a brand new album coming out very, very soon. Thank you so much for being here with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For those of our listeners who may not be familiar with your music, because it's been a while since you've dropped something, how would you describe yourself as a musician? And also, something we ask all our guests, what makes you a dope Black woman?
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer that. But if you're not familiar with my music, I play electric guitar. And I like to explore lots of different types of finger picking rhythms. And then I sing songs about my life or about my feelings. And I don't know, I got asked today actually what I would describe it as. I'd say something like indie R&B, perhaps. With contemporary jazz influence. And I'm from South London. And
come on.
Oh, hey, cool. I don't know, I feel like this is a nice platform to be proud of being a Black woman. But I don't know what makes me dope. I don't know, I suppose my capacity to learn and adapt to my surroundings, but being also unapologetic about who I am. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, we've all had the kind of privilege of listening to some of your album before it's been released. And, you know, it's interesting that you almost struggle to say what kind of artist you are, because when I was listening, at first I thought, oh, this really reminds me of Ari Lennox.
And then
we carried on listening and I was like, oh, this feels like more R&B. Oh, this feels like rock. This feels like indie. Like there was something in there for everyone almost. Do you feel like, is it more difficult for Black women that you feel like you have to, that there's more of a pressure to pigeonhole what kind of artist you are?
I feel like it gets done for us. We get pigeonholed a lot, even without people listening deeply, I find. And I don't know, generally my own experience is that it seems like if you are Black and you're doing kind of slightly alternative to R&B or soul or traditionally Black genres, if you're doing anything slightly alternative to that, then it's still seen as just under the umbrella of soul music or under the umbrella of R&B. And I think those boundaries are shifting a lot nowadays, which is really good. So there's a lot more open-mindedness when it comes to the types of music that Black artists, particularly Black women, can do. I think it's important to just listen to the content of it, really, and listen to the sounds and what does that person want to be also, you know, what does the artist want to be? And I like to not stay specifically tied to a genre. I like having the freedom to explore all of them, because my taste itself is very broad. I love music from everywhere, and I find inspiration everywhere.
I find it interesting when you talk about what soul meant to you, because I was reading something earlier and I think you said something like, as long as it's a genuine response to how you're feeling. And I feel like when you listen to your song Paper Thin, for me, I listened to it loads of times on repeat, and it kept reminding me of childhood me just in my room just singing my heart out. In a way, it reminded me of pain. That might have been what I got from it, but it just reminded me of childhood me just singing my heart out and just zoning the fuck out. Like, you know when you pretend, obviously you sing, so it's a bit different, but as a non-singer, I used to pretend I'm in a music video, and I'm in my room like, you know what I mean? Like, Keisha Cole, broken heart, go, I don't want to be in. And you'd be jamming, like, love, like all of these tunes. You'd be in your room singing your fucking heart out. And it was like, when I listened to Paper Thin, it really kept bringing me back to that childhood memory. And it, when I then read what soulful music meant to you, I was like, this makes so much sense, because I felt like I was like listening to an audio diary. Do you know what I mean? Like, I felt like it was you in your room. I could really envision who I thought the writer was at that point of time in your music. That's what I'm saying. I found that really interesting when it came to that song.
Wow. I mean, I think, yeah, I love that. I think that is what that song is to me. That's probably the sort of most vulnerable one on the album that I've made, maybe ever, actually. I feel really, the first time I was playing it publicly, I'd found it really difficult because I was like, oh my God, this is really personal and just really, I don't know, like, so about things that I never really talk about openly. So yeah, but that for me, yeah, the definition of soul is being very vulnerable in your music and being very honest. And that's all I sort of strive for. I feel like if I can do it and it doesn't really, if it just washes over me and doesn't really mean anything, doesn't make me feel either way, then that's wrong. I need it to make me feel something, you know, whether it's positive or negative.
Yeah, following what Shan said, I was going to say, it reminded me of, when I was listening to it, it reminded me of taking a long drive in the country and just like being alone in the car and like belting at the top of your lungs and just like singing and crying at the same time. And so I'm kind of interested, like, because as you said, there are quite a few as Liv said, there are quite a few different influences coming through. Like, the last song has a little bit of African drumming, part of it does feel very R&B-ish. You can definitely hear the guitar in there. And is that something did you grow up learning the guitar, or were you self-taught? Like, what was music like when you were younger? Like, how did you get influenced in that way?
I learned guitar, I think, quite late. I started when I was 18 on guitar. But I was interested in music from the age of about, from very young age, actually, from like 7, when I started playing the keyboard. My dad and his family, they all play different instruments. So my dad was very encouraging, you know, like, but not like pushy, but he introduced me to the idea of playing an instrument. So he just sort of got me this little keyboard when I was 7. It was like a little Yamaha thing. And just sort of left me there with it. He didn't try to do any, you know, didn't try to force me to play it or anything. So I just found a way to enjoy my solitary childhood. I was an only child, so I would just be basically in my room playing the keyboard, watching cartoons. And then, yeah, not long after that, I started singing because there was a trend going around my school of singing songs from Sister Act 2. And I was obsessed with this film. Like, I'm still obsessed with this film. It's one of my favourite films. And I think if it wasn't for that, I probably might not have started singing. So, I would sing stuff from that. And I don't know, one day, eventually, playing piano and singing happened. I guess when I was about 11, started to play with the idea of writing songs and poetry to music and stuff. It was all very terrible, by the way. When I was 11, was not anything to be recorded. And yeah, throughout secondary school, I just got a bit more confidence because I joined the choir at school. It was always something at home to me that was very private, and, you know, I was really shy about singing publicly. So when I joined the choir at school, I became a bit more confident. And there were lots of other girls like me who wanted to sing, and we all sang together, and it was joyous. And that was basically what I did throughout my whole secondary school and sixth form until I left school and I wanted to learn guitar finally, because I'd seen some girls doing it. I was like, I just, when I was a kid, I could have started learning, but it just, I didn't see any girls playing guitar. So I thought automatically as a 7 year old, I thought, well, that's just for boys, guitar. So yeah, when I grew up and saw some badass chicks playing, it inspired me, and then I started to learn, and I was mostly self-taught. My dad showed me some stuff, but most of the stuff I learned, honestly, is from YouTube.
You can learn anything on YouTube.
You can literally
build a house on YouTube.
Exactly.
There's everything on there.
So big credit to YouTube and things like that.
I find it really humbling that you talk about the fact that you didn't learn the guitar until you was 18. Because sometimes I feel like there is a bit of unconscious elitism in the music industry, that people say, oh, you know, I've been playing this my whole life. You know, I picked up a guitar before I learned how to speak. And it's like, that's all well and good for you. But what if you couldn't afford instruments in your household? Or what if, like you felt like as a woman, it wasn't something that was open to you, or, you know, you couldn't afford music lessons. So the fact that you picked it up a bit later, you're still able to make beautiful music and achieve, I think is really cool and really inspirational.
I felt like even the fact that I had to say that it was late at 18 is like shows that thing that I'm still quite self-conscious and still think that I should, you know, I don't deserve the title of guitarist, you know, because I haven't been playing since I was 4 years old, you know what I mean? But yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't actually matter. It's like what you get out of the experience and what you make as a result of, you know, having the facility, I guess.
I was just going to say, when I used to watch X Factor, and everyone used to come, everyone used to come on, like, oh, so when did you start singing? When I was 1 and a half. Yes, I sang my first hymn in the church choir. And it's like, brother, you couldn't even walk. Every single person on X Factor started at 1.
You can't even barely sit.
Do you know what I mean? Like, everyone started before they could even use the knife and fork. And I'm always thinking, like, you lot had some mad birth, how you just popped out with just talent at 1, because boy. But that's what it reminded me of. It's actually so interesting, because if I was watching X Factor today, and if I heard someone say, when did you start singing? At 25, I'd be like, what? And actually, what does that mean? Yeah. You can start anything at any time. But so it is very interesting. Exactly. You said I started late, because even when you said I started late, I was thinking, that's not even that late. Like, that's college.
I was thinking that too. I was like, in the grand scheme of my life, if I have a long life, you know, it shows that you can just learn stuff at any stage. You can, and it will stay in there, which is great. I'm happy about that. I remember being so satisfied and really proud of myself for teaching myself a new thing when I felt like almost a fully grown person. Little did I know, 18 is not fully grown. I realise that now that I'm way past 18.
But it's interesting because, like, you know, the music industry can be very judgmental, you know, especially to women, because your age and your youth is so much about your how sellable you are. And then, you know, if you were to, for example, if you were to apply to like a really prestigious music university and they said, oh, how long have you been playing the guitar? You said 2 years. They'd probably be like,
2 years?
You would not get in. You wouldn't get a look in. Exactly. And yeah, I mean, I was always wished I could have gone to music school and stuff.
But don't you
like
think
that
would have changed the artist that you were? You would have been. Because I feel like there's so much more competition there. So if you're by yourself, I feel like you're playing more, you're creating music that's more to like who you are, as opposed to it being like what all these other ideas are telling you to do. Because it kind of links in. When I was, again, reading up about, you know, the work you've done in your journey and how your second album that you're releasing was all done basically by yourself in comparison to the first one. In my head, I was thinking, she's got so much creative control now. Because I know from, so the industry that I work in is in music. And I know that from talking to labels, from talking to A&Rs, I know how much of an input they can or cannot have sometimes on an artist. And sometimes you see these stories of artists out there who they've been signed to a label and they're pushing out music that they don't want to push out. So it's such a testament to you to have waited 5 years and to then still have the confidence to come back, but then to have come back by yourself, because that's such a big risk, really, with what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I felt like, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, but it is, I don't know, it is so obsessed, the industry is so obsessed with, you know, young girls and just young people in general, which is fine, but there are things that you can't possibly know how to deal with. Say you actually get incredibly famous as a young person, just out of, you know, nowhere. It's so, I don't know, it just is so much to deal with. Being like massively famous and then everyone is judging you and then everyone is watching everything you do and then you're not even 19 yet, you know? I don't know, I feel like it's so... as you know, as interesting and as cool as the industry can be, I don't know if there's time for young artists to mature and develop so that they know what they want later on, you know. And I feel like in my case, I was lucky to actually have the opportunity to do this now a third time and make an album 3 times in my life. So that the first two, I could, you know, I could learn things and I could learn who I am and what I like. And I realised, you know, even though I don't consider myself to be mega famous, I have had most of my 20s somewhat in the public eye. So I've been growing up and developing and figuring things out and figuring out who I am, what I want to be, what I like, and doing all of that. I just think, you know, imagine it, what it's like for someone who's actually really famous and young. And it's just, you know, it's a crazy world out there to face kind of these unique challenges.
That sounds really scary.
In music. It's pretty scary. But that's not to discredit any of the amazing parts of it, that all the crazy, you know, all the crazy things that you never think are going to happen as well. It's like, it's absolutely amazing as well. But I'm just saying, you know, this album means a lot because I feel like I had to figure a lot of shit out in order to make this one. So,
And we should say you're still a young woman.
Like, oh, well, thank you.
You're still very young. Like,
yes, that's another thing. I think because of the way our minds are conditioned to think that, you know, anything over 25 is older if it's in the music industry, it's like, we're still young women. Do you know what I mean? We're still learning things. 30 is young. People, oh my God, I hate when people are like, oh my God, I'm about to turn 30, I'm old. Or I've heard people say, I'm about to turn 23, I'm old. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Like, so yeah, a massive disclaimer. It's the same. You're not old. It's fine. That's it.
You're as young as you feel.
Yes. Exactly.
Do you know what's mad? I saw the rapper Saweetie, it was her birthday, I think a couple of days ago, and someone wrote, oh my God, she looks so good for her age. I didn't realise she was 27. What? And I was like,
wow.
Is this where we're at now? That's actually mad. Is this where we're at as a society?
Is that where we're at? I'm afraid that that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's mad.
Shit. 27. I'm sorry, but that... No, no, no. We've all got to change the narrative here. That's not okay.
But obviously, you've had, like, 5 years of kind of a period of break to kind of reflect and grow. And, like, what does it feel like now coming back into the industry, having had the 5 years to reflect? What do you feel like you've learned? Do you feel like you're more prepared to navigate the space as a Black woman?
Well, I feel like I'm always learning things. And I always... I guess what I've learned is that I don't know anything as much as I think I know. And especially when you're younger, you just think you know everything. So there's that. And also, yeah, I think the best way that I've learned to navigate this industry as a Black woman is to just really do you. Like, do you the most that you've ever done it? And that's the blessing that the last 5 years has given me, I think, is just to be okay with myself. Like, it's so hard when you're growing up and you're there's so much, especially being a girl as well. There's just so many more things out there to make us feel really insecure and make us hate ourselves, make us want to change ourselves. And, you know, I guess the last 5 years have been me just truly accepting myself and learning the things that I like and what do I like to do. And, you know, accepting my features and my natural self and this is what it is, and finding beauty in, you know, my imperfection. And that is kind of the thing that I take across my whole life. I like things that aren't perfect. I think they're beautiful.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
As Shan mentioned, you know, it's been 5 years since you put something out. Why does now feel like a good time to release new music? Like, where would you say you are mentally? So do you feel like you're in a better place? And what have you learned? Why now, basically?
Obviously, we all wish that there wasn't a pandemic right now. But what I was saying is I finished it, basically. And then I thought, right, that's cool. I can get rid of it now. I can do it. As soon as it was finished, I was like, yeah, it's ready. I'm ready. Let's go. But of course, you know, my label and stuff, they want to strategize and make a plan. I just wanted to put the whole thing out, if I'm honest with you. I just wanted to be like, boom, there it is. But they wanted to kind of do singles and things like that and also wait and see. And then, you know, what's going on in the world struck. So we pushed it back a little bit to now, what is next week. But yeah, I just feel like it's the right time. It represents me now. And I think this is pretty much me for the time being. Until I make something else and discover something else about myself. So yeah.
So being a Black woman in the music industry, I know we've spoken earlier about your relationship with soul music and what soul music means to you. Do you feel like when you were releasing music 5 years ago, were you kind of at the height of your fame, if you like? Do you feel like you had troubles with how people wanted to sell you and how people wanted to frame you and keeping true to yourself at the same time?
Yes, it was all very complicated for me. I feel like people have always been confused about how to market me. And I think it didn't help that I was also confused because of it. So it's usually that, you know, they say, oh, you've got to lead them. You've got to let them know. You just put your foot down. And I was like, okay, but what do I need to show them? What do I what is my, like I said earlier, I've always been like, what am I? What do I want to do? What is this? Why does my hair do that? What are these things? So I basically was learning as they were learning, but there's lots of things that I already knew that I found, you know, just this sort of idea that I had to have that I had to stick to one particular hairdo, for example, to, you know, to make me look memorable or whatever, to have a signature so that people would recognize me. I'm like, I used to do my hair in a little bun that was slightly offset to the side. And the reason I did that, honestly, is because I was on a photo shoot one time and I just wanted to get my hair out of my face and nothing else was really working. And I did that and it kind of just stuck. And then I guess the label sort of thought, oh, that's a thing that she does. But I was seeing it as that's just a solution that I had one day to my hair issues, which I have every day. So there was a lot of just weird stuff around, like, how I looked and, you know, how much skin to show and how to do my hair. Particularly my hair is always, like, a thing. And I realised there's also no, like, black women around or black people around me at the time, you know, within the label or the inner workings, to someone to just say, look, her hair doesn't always want to do what you want it to do. I think back to it and I think, oh, it would have been amazing to have had someone to stand up for me and my hair, because I was too naive to do it myself. I also didn't like the fact that my hair was frizzy and doing what it wanted. I just wanted it to be sleek and down and straight and all these things. And it took me a really long time to accept that stuff. And I feel, you know, feel a bit sensitive now even talking about it, because it's so, I don't know, a lot of people now, like, give me a lot of compliments on my hair. But, you know, at the time I was just thinking, why can't it just be nice? Why can't I have a signature look that I can do all the time? But it's not. It's so much deeper than that. But yes, I can say loads on it.
I was just going to say that must be so limiting to just have your hair up in a side bun or a cocked off bun all the time. Like, that must be so annoying.
Yeah.
And
it is.
You were just touching on the fact that you didn't have many other, like, black people around you, hairdressers, et cetera, et cetera. So what was that like walking in on a day-to-day basis, going into a photo shoot and not even feeling comfortable with your own hair, but then having a white hairdresser behind you trying to do things with your hair that it just, as you said, just doesn't work?
It's really horrible. It's been really horrible to also just be learning about my own hair and how it behaves. And then at the same time, like, finally finding kind of something that sort of works for me. And then doing a photo shoot and then just, you know, those bungee hair bands?
Oh, yeah.
With the two hooks?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
On either side.
Oh, the bubbles.
Those are the enemy. I thought, how can you be putting that in my hair? You can see my hair. And it just, you know, it just be tears. And I just thought, always, if there was a black hairdresser there, or if I could request one, I'd always get them to straighten my hair. And it wasn't, you know.
I think it's interesting because, you know, your experience of your hair when you was younger was limited by your own self-love towards your blackness, and also, I guess, the team you had around you helping you. Whereas I feel like now people are more vocal about who their team are. So when you look at a lot of artists, whether it's Stormzy, whether it's Dave, a lot of their team is made up out of their friends, or they encourage their teams to be black. Obviously, some of them, like, people are independent, so it's a bit different. And because of that, they know who they are. But it's just quite a shame, really, because our hair is so versatile. And I think when you have curly hair and it can go straight, if you had someone who was black leading on it, or who, even though they have to be black, but understood black hair, you would have fell in love with your hair more, and you probably would have been more marketable, because every other different picture would have been a new
That's
girl.
That's what I'm saying.
Do you know what I mean?
But
do
I
you
was...
want a wig today? Break tomorrow. Do you know
That's
what I mean?
Like... So on the second album, Campaign, I did meet people that made me fall in love with my hair, that taught me what it was to have this hair, and actually how versatile it is and how exciting it is to have wash day and stuff like that. Yes, it's a lot of work, but it's so fun and therapeutic. I remember it was like there was kind of tension whenever I would want to change my hairstyle. Do you know what I mean? They'd sort of respond like, well, then no one's going to recognise you. And I'm like, I still have the same face, so it's not that big a deal, like if I just have a different hairstyle. But there is one particular thing that happened that for years I think I sort of just buried it in my subconscious. But like actually how much it affected me and how bad it was. Basically, I discovered the joy of head wraps. So I had my hair done in like a sort of curly roller set or something. And I put a head wrap on it for a gig because I didn't want it to basically, you know, lose the style. So I was protecting it with the head wrap. I did this gig and I thought nothing of it, and I just loved how it felt. I was like, yes, I got like, it's like a whole look. I was really excited. And then I was discussing with a director a music video for my song Green and Gold, which is obviously about what it's all about, you know, my heritage and going to Jamaica and all these things, you know, my identity, my everything. So we're discussing the concept of having this video where we gradually unwrap my hair in the opening scene, and I just thought that was beautiful. I was so sold on it. And then
what color was that director?
You already know.
he's actually French.
Was he black French? Was he white?
Or
was he just bare?
He has an olive skin tone. But he was not black. Is that bad then?
It's less surprising.
No, I was just interested because I feel like you're gonna say, but that's why.
Well, no, the crux of it. So that's interesting, and we should talk about that. But the thing that wasn't good was that basically somebody who I won't name.
Name them.
I can't. But somebody commented on. Because I was getting excited. I was like, oh, great, we're going to do the video. Then I was told that the general consensus was I shouldn't be seen in a head wrap in my video.
Wow.
Because it would be considered too black.
That's mad. That's
it's nuts. Absolutely insane.
Especially because when...
And now the same people would probably... be like, oh, you're so, you know, it's great, you know, your hair,
I love
exactly
your hair
like, oh, I love
today.
All your different looks that you have, like, so that happened, and I kind of buried it, thinking, oh, well, yeah, okay, I suppose, yeah, that'll be too black, so I shouldn't do that. And then
did they actually say that though? Did they say the words too black?
Yes.
Mad. Wow.
That's mad. Yes. That's so crazy, because
they
think...
also said rootsy, whatever that
rootsy.
Means.
Oh, like the film.
It would be too black and rootsy.
Grave now.
And stop it now.
Yeah. So I remember that happening, and as you can imagine, that I just like I was saying, I was already confused a lot of my life growing up, being mixed race and having hair that my mum didn't understand and my dad didn't understand, and therefore I didn't understand, and being raised by my grandparents and all of this stuff. And then they say I can't do that, and this one thing I found that's like joy that like helped me, that's mm-hmm. another solution. Yeah, I wasn't allowed to do it. So I was finding this always various weird things like, oh, we like it when your hair's got this type of curl. I'm like, you're going to get whatever type of curl it wants to be.
Shows up on the day, huh?
So, listen, anyone with black hair knows that you could use the exact same products and the exact same routine, and it's
trigger warning.
It's not,
gonna come out how it did yesterday, honey. It's just not.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so But I also had to learn that and get to embrace that and be okay with it. So,
did those experiences make you like have you back up against the wall and kind of like push away from your blackness a little bit and try to find the like neutral, acceptable form of yourself for the masses?
I just listened to a podcast actually, between Efwa Hirsch and Adoa, and they were saying exactly this, and it struck me that I didn't realize that I was probably doing that. I was probably believing the tiny, subtle comments, you know, and judgments that I've grown up with. It's probably sunk in somewhere where to the point where I thought that I did have to try and contort myself to not be as black as I am, you know?
Yeah, and it makes sense, though, because I think if you're saying that you had, before you even came into the industry, you struggled with who you were, you struggled with confidence, your identity, and then you come in, and the bit about you that you know and seem to love because you want to show off your curls, they're shutting away from you. You can only imagine how damaging that is for a young person to even if you came in knowing, okay, this is who I am, blah, 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 to then have all these people telling you, you can't be this, you can't be that, you can't be this. And it's mad because when you think about like microaggressions or stereotypes, and they're basically telling you to stare the furthest away you can from stereotypes. If you was to act out, you would end up being stereotyped as an angry black
person. This is the thing. This is the thing as well. Like, it's just that whole thing as well, that whole trope. It's like anyone can get angry about injustice. Do you know what I mean? If you're just angry about something that is clearly wrong, why is it that you get stereotyped as an angry black woman when it's just wrong? That stuff is wrong. You're okay to feel an emotional response to that. So I just, there's just huge flaws everywhere, and it's I don't know, it shows there's just not enough. There's not enough black people working in positions of power within the music industry. And there's not enough black women doing that either. And I am still surprised to this day. There's like not one black person working on my project at my label.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Mm. Is that not something you can request, though?
I don't know. I think there's only one black lady that actually works there as a
in a
higher thing. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but you know, it's just eye-opening, and I think it's all very well and good to, you know, repost on your Instagram as a label, but what are you actually going to do to make any meaningful changes happen so that people like me, who are younger than me, you know, if they're getting signed, that they can feel supported and understood? It's really hard out there because it's definitely a very white dominated industry in the business side of it. There's no lack of black artists. But then, you know, it just ends up feeling like you're getting a bit exploited.
Yeah.
You know.
And is this part of the reason why you decided to make your album by yourself this time around?
I think it was to do with that, yeah, because I mean, there's a lot of catalysts for that. I loved the process, don't get me wrong, of making that second album. However, there were things that I didn't like, loads of things that I didn't like, and it was mainly to do with not being trusted with my own gauge of quality. Like, I feel like I knew what were good songs and what I wanted to use to represent me and my voice, and you know, to the point where I'm having an argument saying, or someone at my label was like, oh, you only want to make songs for you that you like.
Well, duh.
And I was like, And then it just turned out that all the ones that I actually really liked and was proud of were also the ones that they liked. And I was like, what's your point?
Like, now I'm making it for you, bitch.
Exactly. Now I'm like, you know what? I don't really need anyone to tell me which songs should go on this album. I've always known. And it's just, I feel like this, the reason I called it my name as well is just, this is stuff I've always wanted to do and who I've always been. It just, I was afraid of it. I wasn't allowed to let it come out for lots of reasons. And now I had the space and the time, as you say, to reflect. 5 years is a long time, but it also goes quickly. So I worked really hard and I just really wanted to find it. And it was absolutely painful and euphoric at times and ecstatic and everything in between. But I just feel like if I can do this, it's important to, now I can, you know, I can show other people that you can, you just need to like listen to yourself.
Mm.
Don't ignore yourself.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mention hair, because I think a lot of white people to this day don't realise, you know, how political it can be. Because when you was talking about your experiences on set and with music managers and stuff, it reminded me of the comments that Fleur East has made recently about how she was told that she should straighten her hair to appeal more to a white audience. And, you know, this idea that it's all about appealing to the white audience rather than the audience that you actually want to appeal to.
Yeah. Like, why can't you just appeal? Why do you have to try to appeal to anyone in particular? Just whoever likes your stuff. Do you know what I mean? Let them decide.
Let them come to you.
I don't know. Exactly. I think it does them a disservice. Like, you're trying to contrive what they will like, you know. That's like saying you can't like something because it's curly. It's just really ridiculous.
I also feel like if you fix one thing, something else will inevitably become a problem. Like, if you fix your hair, then it might be that you need to lose weight, or then it might need to be that you need to make sure that your music is less soulful or whatever that's supposed to mean. Like, there's always going to be something that you're going to have to address. And it must be so empowering now to be in a space where you can just genuinely do what feels true to you, right?
It does. I mean, it feels really, you know, it's amazing. But it was also, it comes with so much responsibility, and I'm so sensitive to stuff as well. No. It's like, you know, I'd rather just sort of sit in a room and make stuff and draw stuff and then occasionally go outside. But yeah, it does feel different now, though. I feel like the response to me being truly myself with no boundary has been something that I've always wanted. I feel like people have seen that in me, but I think it's only now that it's really coming across in a way that I've hoped it would come across, you know, because I am just whatever I am. And it's, you know, it's like you say, it's really difficult being a woman as well, like, because you're just constantly judged on absolutely everything, and therefore you're judging yourself on those things, and it's hard to remember that it's all right, you know. You're all gorgeous, you're all women, so you're gorgeous. And it's fine.
Amen. I just want to touch on the comments about the Brit Awards from a couple of years ago, because I know this is something that you thought is important to clarify and something that you wanted to kind of make sure that everyone is on the same page about. So this is, you know, this was back in 2016, and there was this hashtag going around, Brits So White, because of a lack of racial diversity in the nominees for the Brit Awards. So for those who may not remember this or weren't familiar with it at the time, what did you say and what in your head did you actually mean when it happened?
At the time, I said that the hashtag was racist. And at the time, I think it was, I just thought race, I thought if you are a race, then racism can work any which way, basically. And at the time, I wasn't aware that there was a whole, that there was anything called reverse racism or, you know, I didn't know these terms of systemic racism. So I just was looking at it very bluntly and just sort of in my logical brain, I was like, oh, shouldn't say that because that means that. So that is why I said it. And then quickly I was educated by a lot of people who saw it on Twitter. And then two of my close friends as well took me aside after that and we had a big talk and I ended up just learning all this shit that I didn't know, basically. I'm obviously not proud of it, and it was a great source of pain to sort of receive a backlash like that for something I didn't know about. And for people to think that I, in some way, was not anti-racist. Because obviously I'm black and I just thought that was obvious. But basically, yeah, I was just thinking like, oh, you know. And also people were saying, oh, because you're not nominated, don't you feel that that's unfair? And I honestly didn't think about it that way. I just thought, oh, you know, the Brits is a very commercial thing and the people that are nominated have just sold way more records than me. I didn't think about it like, oh, they're just predominantly nominating white people. So then I just basically did loads of research and got off Twitter for a while and realised it just opened my eyes to actually the large amount of inequality in all of these spaces, to the point where I thought actually, yeah, like it would have been cool to have been nominated, you know, but it's that thing as well. I just thought, well, that's fair enough. You know, I'm not popular or whatever. I just sort of accepted, like I was saying earlier, like you just accept things and then you try to dumb yourself down a bit and just you're sort of, I was just very oblivious and I was just not aware of the actuality of discrimination in all of these industries. Or I knew about it. It's just that particular thing. I just honestly thought I haven't sold that many records, so I shouldn't be nominated. But yeah, I chose the wrong words and I just wish I hadn't said it and I didn't know what I was talking about, basically.
I think that's actually a really powerful thing that you've just said, because one of the things that we do in terms of Dope Black Women is understanding that Black people are not a monolith. And that we all are at different stages, and that just because you're a Black person it doesn't mean, while you may experience racism, it doesn't mean that you understand it or have the awareness to teach somebody else. And so really the idea that not only white people should be educating themselves, but Black people need to educate themselves about systemic racism and about the history of that. And so the fact that you went out of your way to go and actually do the research, I think is quite powerful. And I think something that we could all benefit from, regardless of how much experience we've had with racism or not. But I think now that you have this knowledge, and I guess especially in the light of everything that's happening with Black Lives Matter and George Floyd and Belly and Toyin, you know, how do you feel about being an artist in these times now? And do you feel like, you know, how do you feel about responding to Black Lives Matter as an artist?
I am more than happy to speak about it and to support the movement, and just, not that I didn't support the movement either, I just didn't understand about it, and I didn't know about it. But being visible again now, and releasing music at this time, honestly, it just makes me want to be more visible and show other Black women that, you know, this is something you can do regardless of what you are experiencing. You know, also, you know, I feel like I'm kind of normal person, you know, grew up in a normal household, working class household, and just sort of did this. It's all quite strange still. But yeah, I do, I guess I didn't realise at the time that there was anybody looking up to me. I just thought, you know, I mean, I still think I'm not really, you know, why does anyone care what I have to say? But yeah, that was something I definitely didn't realise at the time. And now I feel just responsible to spread a positive message, I guess, and just say, you know, and if, I don't know, if I can offer some hope and that kind of thing to particularly young girls, then that's really good. But yeah, the movement is just so powerful. I think it really, I'm just in awe of like how widely spread now the message has got. And it's incredible to see, because, you know, it's just, people have been saying this for a really long time. So it's like, it's finally now, it does give me hope that something is going to be different for the next generation, at least. Maybe if it's not in my lifetime, but but yeah.
I remember at the time people were using this phrase that you were problematic. And something we've spoken about on the podcast before is cancel culture and how toxic cancel culture can be, especially to Black women. And that, you know, oftentimes it's not very helpful just to immediately attack someone rather than to try and educate them about something. So did you, let me know, what was it like for you in that moment? I mean, you realize that you had made a mistake and you went out of your way to educate yourself, but it's like people still want to almost blacklist you for this and to attack you for this. Like, how does it feel to actually experience that?
It feels absolutely horrible. I didn't consider myself to be a bad person or a racist or any of the horrible names that people were calling me. So it was quite, yeah, it was really depressing, honestly. I was really very sad for a very long time about it. And honestly, like maybe for 4 years, carrying it around with me, afraid that someone's going to bring it up, afraid that someone is going to directly tweet to me, which they did just before the videos of George Floyd's murder circulated. I saw some tweets going around like, hey, remember what Leanne LaHavas said? And I just immediately knew what it was. And, you know, it's not nice. And I don't want to, I'm not trying to do this victim thing, but it was just, it was really horrible. Because I didn't mean, well, I didn't think I was meaning anything bad by it. You know, you have to be a really actual piece of shit to mean something like that if you know what it means. Do you know what I mean? So I just felt it was a bit, I can understand obviously why and how it looked. And like I said, I thought I knew everything. I just didn't. But yeah, it's a part of my past that is very painful and wish hadn't happened. But it has happened. And I now that I've sort of, I feel like I've somewhat dealt with it, and having opportunities like this to talk about it makes me feel a lot less frightened, I guess, talking about it. Because I know I wasn't coming from a bad place. And it's just, I think it was hard for a lot of people to fathom that I just honestly didn't know what that meant.
Yeah. Well, I just want to thank you for being so open with your story and your experience, because
thank you.
The main, one of the main messages that Dope Black Women try to get across is that it is a safe space. So mm-hmm. we all come on here and speak very open. A lot of the time we're shouting trauma in the middle of our podcast because we talk about things that are vulnerable to us.
Yeah.
So it feels really nice that you're able to come on as a guest and have that share that vulnerability with us and the audience. And it kind of feels like we've, in talking to you today, we've been on a journey. So like I feel like I knew what you were like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I now know what you are like now. And yeah. I think that, I just want to say, when you let go of, you said something earlier, like this albums you release and it's you just letting go of it and you kind of wanted to get it over and done with and push it out. Mm-hmm. And to me, it feels like you're pushing away those bad memories that happened.
Yes.
And even if people are going to send you these tweets like little dickheads 5 years later, that's fine. That's really fine, because even though you might be upset about that younger version of you,
mm-hmm.
realistically, because you had to do all that research, it made you become closer to who your blackness is.
Yeah.
Because imagine if you never tweeted that, you'd have gone through this whole time now still wanting to get your hair the little style up.
Well, exactly. I mean, still wanting to straighten it. Probably would have all fallen off and the rest is history.
So like, ending it on more of a positive note, what's like your long-term dream with your career? Like what where do you want to see yourself going now in the next 5 years?
God, I'm sorry, I'm feeling emotional.
It's okay, baby.
We all cry. It's okay. We've all cried on this podcast by now.
Yes. No, I just to add as well, I just felt like, you know, it's like, it's weird. It's hard to explain because I never didn't feel black, if that makes sense. Like, I always knew what I am. And my you know, my mum and dad, they... I'm mixed, obviously, so I just, they taught me, you're mixed, and that's it. So I just grew up with this very, like, blunt way of thinking, but I always knew, like, that the world is gonna see me like this, and that I am black, and that I look black, and, you know, my culture is mixed, my heritage is mixed, but my upbringing also was predominantly Jamaican. I was raised by my Jamaican grandparents.
South London group.
So I feel like when this was all happening, it like, I was so, I don't know, because I have all of that and I know myself, or I knew myself pretty well at that point. But there was just lots of things that I didn't know. It just made me sort of feel like, God, I don't actually know anything. You can be raised Jamaican and then still not be considered black by the black community. So I don't know. I felt really, you know, kind of like a weight was lifted when I was able to just say, like, oh my God, I fucked up. I'm really sorry. And I didn't understand.
We're all growing.
We're
all growing.
And grieve.
They say that the best things or the greatest things that people achieve are oftentimes out of the shame of things that they've done before. And I think it's just really powerful for you to come and to hold yourself to account instead of waiting on somebody to come at you and, you know, for you to use this platform to hold yourself, to be accountable, you know. And it shows that you're ready to, like, move forward with this great new album and this new journey with this new, like, you know,
sense of yes!
Yeah.
Jinx.
Padlock.
But, yeah, it is to answer your question though as well of my future goals. I don't know. Honestly, I've got a few, but one of them is obviously to continue making tunes and making stuff. Like, I love to draw and I love to paint, and I want to get into all these other creative fields because it's just really fun and therapeutic. But also I love to express myself. But also I want to find a way to provide opportunities for Black women in the UK to do more things, particularly related to the music industry, where I see that there is still a lot of inequality. I want to see more Black women playing instruments in bands. I want to see more Black women being sound people and lighting people, tour managers, presidents of record companies. And I think it's possible to do that. But I want to help in some way. That's my goal, really, because it's something I think about all the bloody time, is how can this be different? How can we make it appeal to Black women? How do we, you know, get this, the message that you can do whatever, into schools and into places like that.
I love that. Well, we can't wait to see what you have coming up, and we can't wait for everyone else to hear your album, because we love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
So where can people find you, and where can people find your stuff as well?
Well, usually you can find me on all the social media platforms. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, occasionally, because I've been burned. But I am there sometimes. And also YouTube. I like to do uploads to my own channel and stuff, so that's fun. And yeah, all my new music is out on Spotify and all of that stuff. And if you are an analog freak like myself, then my stuff is available on vinyl. The new album is available to pre-order on vinyl. And if you're also into the signing thing, I did some signing. So yeah, I'm around. Also, I'm playing a show. I'm doing one of those live streamed gigs.
All right.
Oh, amazing.
I shall be doing it as a one-woman show at the Roundhouse on the 15th of July, and you can buy tickets for it. And I'm going to donate my personal proceeds to Black Lives Matter-related charities that are close to my heart.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
So, so cool.
Thank you.
15th of July.
Share the information about Roundhouse on our platforms as well.
Thank you. Amazing.
Well, thank you so much for listening, guys. And thank you so much for being here, Leanne. Make sure you listen back every week to hear brand new episodes.
Like Liv said, make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them from. On Twitter and Facebook, we are Dope Black Women. And on Instagram, we're Dope Black Women 1. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically Black.
All the way Black.
Blackity Black.
Blacktastic!
Hey!
I love it. Wow. Thank you so much, ladies. This has been really lovely and special, and thank you for, yeah, thank you.
Wake up in the morning. Thank God for life. Oh, who knows?
First thing in the morning.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's better.
Oh, look at you coming to outsell me. You're done now. Teamwork and that makes a dream work and that gigs. You're done now. Okay, my leg.